think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 267 of Low Limit Football on this 16th of December, 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, not much fanfare, not much going on. We are just going to discuss the decade that was, the 2010s, discussing the best football player, the best starting 11, and some of the most memorable stories that we came across over the last 10 years of world football. Very excited to do this show. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas, man. Are you ready to go 10 years strong?
I kind of have to in a way. No, thank you so much. This is really going to be quite interesting because it's been quite a fascinating decade. I think with the globalization of how the sport has evolved, the way we consume, the way we see it, the way players are, the way coaches are, the way fans are, the way everything has changed. I think over the last 10 years, we've seen such a big change in how the sport has been perceived from an international perspective that I'm curious to see how the next 10 years might go. But yeah, really looking forward to this discussion and can't wait to get it on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the decade also that saw changes at the very top of FIFA, right? With Sepp Blatter stepping down, Gianni Infantino coming in. We saw all the controversy, the Qatari World Cup. I mean, it's been crazy both on the pitch and off the pitch. And it's something that's certainly going to be very exciting to talk about. So let's jump right into it. Obviously, tonight, this is a departure from our normal show. So no trivia tonight, no opening thoughts tonight. This is just strictly you, me discussing football for the last 10 years. And I'm looking forward to doing that. I can't wait to jump in. So let's get into it. And of course, let's get into it with the easiest of things, right? One of the biggest things that has dominated the last 10 years, maybe a little bit more of world football is the great debate, right? The Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi debate. Who's better? You've got fans on both sides. My guy's better. Your guy's better. My guy did this. Your guy did this. It's sometimes nauseating to sit there and talk about because it's always in the moment, right? When somebody wins a title, when somebody wins a goal scoring title, Ballon d'Or, we had a week ago. There's always that discussion of Messi versus Ronaldo. But I think at this time, the discussion is appropriate to have because we get to look back on what these two players have done over the past 10 years. And I wanted to start out by saying, we are in an era where we get two of the greatest players ever. And I've said this before, Rob, we get to look at the two greatest players ever and what they've accomplished, whether it be in the moment, whether it be the Ballon d'Or moment, the Champions League moment. But here we get to look at their work as a whole over the last 10 years. We can start out with some of the accomplishments, right, that they've done. Let's just start with even just in the Champions League, because the Champions League is probably going to be one of the measuring sticks that we'll look at for both players. Messi's won the Champions League in 2005, 06, 08, 09, 10, 11, and 14, 15. He's also the player that was on that treble-winning side under Pep Guardiola, if you remember correctly. You know, where
also won under Luis Enrique.
Correct. Oh yes, absolutely. But I was saying that was probably the swan song of when he won it, was that huge year. I think it was 2012.
The treble year was 2009.
Nine. So that's how things blend in, because I thought it was after the Inter treble, not before. But regardless, okay, we go to Cristiano Ronaldo, Champions League in 07, 08 with United, Champions League also with Real Madrid, 13, 14, 15, 16, 16, 17, 17, 18, those consecutive, world championship years, those consecutive Champions League years. It's, you know, now he's trying to do it at Juventus, where he's the player that's done it at multiple teams, okay, where Messi's always been Barca, where he's always played at Barca. So, you know, I'd like your thoughts first going into what they've done individually, and where they compare for you.
Well, I think you hit it right there on the nail there. I mean, you're looking at two of the greatest players of our generation, maybe being blessed into seeing these type of players. I mean, when you're talking about almost 1,400 goals, a combined 63 trophies won during their course of the career, always breaking the 50 goal barrier in a single season, you know, playing multiple games. It transcends, I think, has changed the sport as a whole. I mean, if you start at the decade, you know, going into 2010, these two were the best players in the world, I think deservedly so, but you didn't have that debate. I mean, they were both at what? One Ballon d'Or each, and now one has six, the other one has five, and 11 Ballon d'Ors. That's incredible. That's such such two players have dominated sports. And really, I think at its peak was when both were in probably the most competitive league in the world. I think when they were both at, it just fit the narrative. I mean, there was this kind of sort of rivalry, but not just from an individual standpoint, but also from a team standpoint. You know, Messi obviously was on Barcelona, Cristiano was on Real Madrid, and now Clásico being the important match, and I think we can say that it had to be the dominant derby of the decade that we've seen because of those two players. You know, you can even talk about sponsorship. One plays for Adidas, the other one has Nike. You know, national teams, Argentina and Portugal, even though they weren't really big rivals, but they obviously were contenders for the titles that they played for, be it a World Cup or a Euros for Portugal or a Copa America for Argentina. We've been blessed to see two dominant players. I think what really stands out, I think, here now we're heading into a new decade. You know, they're on the late side of 30. You know, Messi's 32. Ronaldo is 34.
Yeah, I don't think he's turned 35 yet.
Yeah. So the fact that they're just about to end their careers or about just a few more years, just, you know, is a bit bittersweet, because I feel like at least some of us, have been appreciative of what they've done for the entire sports. But what we've seen from fans and pundits and coaches everywhere is the fact that they have to compare the two and they have to decide, oh, who's better. And well, in a way, you have to look at how different they play. I think you really have to compare one, the position. You know, Ronaldo was always, he started off as a midfielder at United and then switched to a goal scorer, a big goal scorer, as a winger, then a striker, to really become a true threat onto goal. Whereas for Messi, you know, you have a goal scorer in that as well, but you also have a creator, you have someone that is able to be creative on the ball and off the ball, you know, always trying to pick out the person that is able to score, be it your strikers or even just being in the position where he is able to score. So you have that kind of comparison, really. And I think the more important thing about this all is that, you know, you look at these two players from a general, I think, personality point of view, there is a big contrast. You know, Ronaldo has always been someone that's been in the spotlight, kind of a temperamental character, you know, isn't someone to shy away from controversy, always able to speak. Not really I think you could probably say as a showman as well, but I think you can understand considering all the barriers that he's been through in his career. Whereas you look at Messi, you know, he's someone that's always been saying that he's more reserved, that, you know, that individual awards really have no importance in his career. I mean, I'm sure there is, but at least that's what he's portraying to the media, that he only cares about winning titles for Barcelona. So there's that. I mean, in the end, you have to be really blessed at what we're going through. I think the fact that they've dominated, hands down, more than any other player in the world, at least in this decade, maybe of all time as well, you know, they have already put themselves as one of the greatest players of all time. I mean, yes, you can also make your comparison about who is better, not just between the two, but who's the best of all time. People will say Ronaldo's the best of all time. People will say Messi's the best of all time. You know, even the likes of Pele and Maradona, who we, at least the general football fans, they considered the best of all time, would go in and go for those guys. And it's different generations. I think what we probably won't see such a dominant decade by these two from any type of player in world football ever again. And I think, unfortunately, that hopefully that this rivalry won't be spoiled from the bitterness of who's better because of tribalism, but rather we hope that, you know, by the time we're much, much older and the people and the kids these days are looking at other players that are dominating and being the best in the world, you know, they'll be able to watch videos on YouTube or read about how great these two players were in their prime. And it was this decade that they were at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, you know, I think if either of them had a drawback, right? Let's look at a little bit of a negative. I would say that Ronaldo would probably wish that he was the prolific goal scorer that Messi was. You know, Messi's won 5 European Golden Shoes in that 10-year time span, where Cristiano Ronaldo won 3. Also, there was that one year, I believe it was 2012, where Messi scored 73 goals across all competitions, which is an insane...
Yeah, that's right, 91 goals in a calendar year.
Yeah, it's an insane amount of goals. Ronaldo's got the international title, though, right? Ronaldo took the team to the European Championships in 2016. He also took the... he also won the Nations League with Portugal over the Netherlands just last year. So there are those international titles at the top level. I know Messi won, I believe it was the U20 World Cup in 2005. So it's not that Messi has not won an international title. It's just that I think Messi would prefer to win a Copa America. He would prefer to win a World Cup, because that's kind of the measuring stick, because Messi has the Maradona measuring stick on his back as well, right? I mean, his own countryman who has won the World Cup and has done those things. Messi has not done that yet. So I think there are those quote-unquote regrets from these two players, right, on those sides. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo, and you can see just by the physical specimen that he is, he's always striving to be the best. At 34 years old, he's in better physical condition than some of the 24-year-olds he plays against. And it's a testament to his drive and to his aspirations as to what he wants. He wants to be the best all the time. You know, Messi the same way. But Messi, like you said, Messi seems to be more of the creator that we've seen, as well as the goal scorer, where Ronaldo was more of the goal scorer and the self creator. And again, we've seen an era of world football here that has been unforgettable, in my opinion. You know, we talk about like the 80s with Maradona, you know, leading into the early 90s. We talk about the 60s and the 70s with Pele. We've never seen a time when we've had two so equally matched superstars, you know, playing against each other. We could compare them. You kind of alluded to it yourself, Rob. You know, we got to see these guys twice a week for 9 years. I'm sorry, not twice a week, twice a season against each other for 9 years.
Or more
in El Clasico. So there has been, and I've got to tell you, that El Clasico since Ronaldo's move to Juve has certainly lost a little bit of its sparkle, right? Because we don't have that Messi Ronaldo matchup that everyone seems to love. It's not a selling point anymore. It's still a wonderful match, top two teams in La Liga, but there's the star power that these two players bring is just incredible, and it really combined into that match. You're also looking at two of the highest paid athletes in the world. At one point, I believe Cristiano Ronaldo was number one, Messi was number two, and that was very recent, like I want to say like 2017 or so.
Yeah,
so
that's
these
right.
These guys bring the money too. It's just it's amazing what they have done individually. It's amazing what they have done for their countries and the focus on their countries. It's amazing what they've done for their clubs, and it's amazing what they've done for football as a whole, where they have really become the spotlight. And again, like we said, we've always seen the tiresome debates, right? But I think now is a great time to reflect on the greatness that they both brought to this sport and what they have given the world, you know, and moving forward. I know, like you said also, Rob, that we're kind of in the twilight of their careers. Messi 32, Ronaldo 34. We'll start to see them wind down. Do we see them wind down, do you think, in other leagues? I mean, I know we've seen Ronaldo already move to Italy, but I think from there, because that's still one of the top leagues, and he's moved to the top team in one of the top leagues. Do we see them move to lower leagues? I mean, we've seen the likes of Xavi go to Saudi Arabia. We've seen Iniesta go to Japan. We've seen David Beckham go to the United States in MLS. Do we see these guys make moves that way? I know there's talk of Messi going to Newell's. There's been talk recently of Cristiano Ronaldo going back to Sporting. So do you see that happening? Do you see these guys kind of hanging it up at the top level in the top leagues?
I just wanted to correct you. Xavi went to Qatar.
Oh, Qatar. Sorry. That's right.
In terms of their futures, I mean, the dusty's in their hands, I think. I think when you're these type of players who have just dominated an entire decade and done almost everything that it would take a footballer to do, in a way, you control your destiny. Mm-hmm. I think in that sense. Would it be a kind of a bittersweet ending and a way to put it off for both these players to end their careers at the clubs they started? I mean, obviously, you know, Messi started all his career at Barcelona, but, you know, did his youth career at Newell's, mm-hmm. whereas Ronaldo did debut professionally at Sporting. So, yeah, I think that would be kind of a bittersweet thing. I mean, I think, and I guess I'll make my big prediction here, I think Messi's contract is until 2021, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. And Ronaldo's is, I think, similar as well.
Yeah.
I think, personally, and I think I'll make my big, bold prediction of the decade of the 2020s. I just think that by the end of their contracts, they just say, you know what, guys, thank you so much for everything. It's been a wonderful career. And they hang up their boots and they finish it off.
You know, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about going out on top. And I think that would cause a stir. I think both options, both endings cause a stir, right? Messi goes to Newell's. Cristiano Ronaldo goes to Sporting. They play 1 year, then they hang it up. Oh, you know, and they dominate, right? Because that's the players that they are. They're dominant players. They will always play at the top level. And you're going to see them, I guess, quote unquote, overachieve. Okay, where maybe what they're doing when they go to those teams are not as good as what they did at Barca or at Real Madrid or at Man United or Juventus. And people will say, why are they hanging them up? Why are they going to those teams to go out on top, right? It's going to feel like they are overachieving in their last year. So I think that will be the argument against them taking that path. The path that you're describing, whereas all of a sudden Messi walks out of the locker room at the end of May, looks at everybody and goes, hey, thanks, it's been fun.
maybe a bit more bigger than that.
Of course, but I think that is, depending on how they're playing, people might look at them and go, they should have walked away a year earlier, right? Because we're going to see, I mean, we're even starting to see it right now with Cristiano Ronaldo, where we're starting to see a little bit of a decline in his quality of play. You know, you don't want to see that decline go too far. Because you don't want to see a person as a shell of what they were. I mean, we're seeing it actually right now with Gigi Buffon. You know, we remembered the great Gigi Buffon over the years at Juventus. And then this year, for some reason, it's been a totally different world. So we don't want to see that type of ending for these great, great players. And I don't know where the ending is. The ending, I'm hoping, is somewhere in the middle. Where they go out recognizably as not their top level. But they go out at still a high level that we look at them and say, you know, that's what we remember. That's the greatness that we remember, the dribbling, the scoring, the prowess that these two brought to the pitch. That's how I want to remember them in their last game as much as I want to remember them, you know, during the decade as well. So
I think it'll be a sad moment for all of us, for both these players, you know, regardless of when they retire. Because I think another thing is that one of them is going to retire earlier than the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I see it.
I do.
But yeah, I personally think that, you know, when it comes to these two players, I mean, Pele, what, he ended his career at the New York Cosmos, mm-hmm. at 37. Maradona technically ended his career at 37 at Boca.
Right.
Zidane ended his career at the World Cup. And the way he did it, he got sent off because of that headbutt, yes. in the World Cup final.
Yep.
Ronaldo, unfortunately, ended his career not because of because he wanted to, but just he couldn't handle it anymore. He did it in 2011.
Surgeon saver. Right, exactly. So, I mean...
Ronaldinho, you know, technically is retired, but we don't remember it because, you know, it was just so far off. I think when it comes to these two players, there has to be an exception where you're like, you know what, guys? I've done all I have done. I don't want to risk my career or at least my legacy going back to where I started just because of the bittersweetness,
mm-hmm.
but rather it may be controversial for a lot of people, but you know what? I want to finish it in Europe and say, thanks guys. It's been real fun and hanging on there.
Yeah. I'm with you. I don't want to see the Ronaldinho ending because Ronaldinho kind of at the end kind of, you know, floundered around Brazil and you know, you just didn't get the Ronaldinho that everybody remembers, the smiling Ronaldinho, right? The Barca Ronaldinho, the Milan Ronaldinho, the you know, that happy player, right?
Yep.
You didn't get to see it, and I think that's the ending I would hope we never see for the two of these players for sure. So
I do have one more thing.
Yeah.
I guess we could analyze them real quick.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? What do you think they do after they eventually retire? I think because, yeah, what's next for them?
I think they would go home. I think they both go home. I think
you don't see them going into a coaching career or...
Oh, after that. You know, I was thinking about that. I don't think either of them would make great coaches.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, Messi is... For me, I think of the two, Messi might be the better coach. But Messi's greatness is in his abilities. That's the problem. These two players, we look at them, we're like, oh, these guys would be great coaches. I don't see it because their greatness is not in their intelligence. I mean, they're both highly intelligent footballers. Please don't think I'm saying they're stupid, right? But their greatness is in their physical abilities, okay? Completely. The strength of Ronaldo, the low center of gravity and the ability to dance between legs for Messi. Those are the kinds of things you can't teach, okay? They're not the kinds of things you can instruct. It is something, my father used to always say that, you know, it has to be born in you, okay? A lot of these players, this is born into them. It's part of their soul. It's part of their structure. And I think the greatness that we see out of Messi and Ronaldo, for me, doesn't translate into coaching. I think Zidane was a much better person that was prepared at coaching because he was more of a tactician when he played on the pitch. He had the talent, but he was also a tactician. He was very intelligent. I think a guy like Andrea Pirlo should be coming out and doing that. I think we're seeing success with guys like Frank Lampard. You know, those guys that are cerebral in their footballing, those are the guys that I think make great coaches. And I just don't see Ronaldo or Messi as cerebral as those other guys because Messi and Ronaldo do it with their physical abilities, and their physical abilities are unmatched by anybody in world football right now. And that's my opinion. You know,
yeah.
How about you? Yeah. You see them being coaching?
I just think because of the personality, I would kind of see someone like Ronaldo as a coach for some reason. But I'll agree with your point that, you know, these things that these players have done, they can't be taught. And I'm sure they both see the game much more differently and probably much more better than what we do.
Mm.
But I think you're right. I don't think I see them in a coaching perspective, but I think I do see them. I think they definitely have to go home, regardless of what home may be for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'll always be in the spotlight. What we can really say is what will happen to them. You know, Pele is an ambassador for the sport. He was never a coach. Maradona was a coach, but always been someone that's kind of been a figurehead. Ronaldo has also been an ambassador. you know, the likes of Ronaldinho, Zidane was a coach, Cruyff was a coach. Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen to them? I think that they, I think I'll agree and repeat what I said. You know, I think the destiny's in their hands. They're free to do whatever they want. But I think they'll still be involved in the sport. Maybe they're like a Beckham-esque type of person, because they're always will be recognized until the day they die. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think the they both will be involved in football from some sort of sense. And yeah, I'm curious to see what happens to them, but also a bit sad, because that's when their careers will both end.
You know, so
we'll see them on the pitch ever again.
Let's do this. You know, I'm at JP Uccello on Twitter. You're at Roberto Rojas 97. We're at Low Limit Football on Twitter. Let's put it out there to the listeners. If you get this and you want to send us messages over the next couple of weeks, where do you see Messi and Ronaldo post footballing career? Do you see them as coaches? Do you see them as ambassadors? Do you see them as just
pundits,
or just really rich guys sitting on the beach? Because all of those could happen. So let's put it out there. If you guys want to, over the next couple of weeks while we're off, you know, drop us a line and let us know what you think of that. So let's move on, because obviously we're talking players. Let's talk team of the decade, right? And mm-hmm. and you and I have developed, you know, separate of each other, we've developed teams, formations. We've also picked a head coach for our team as well. So I'm gonna basically go first and just basically tell you that my team is set up in a 3-4-3. The reason I did this is because I wanted to get more midfielders, or as many midfielders as I could. I wanted, but there, you know, I wanted strikers, so I went with a 3-4-3 myself. How about you, Rob? What did you set your team up as?
I did it in reverse. I did a 4-3-3.
A 4-3-3. So you went...
I think that formation was kind of the one that is the standard of the decade as well. Mm-hmm. I think personally that's the one that's been dominant and most used by most teams.
Sure, absolutely, and without a doubt. So let's get into the players. Let's work from the back up. For me, you know, some of these are based in fact, but many of these are based in the smell test, and some of them are based in my heart. And you know what? It's my World 11. I'll take my team onto the pitch, and you can challenge me and see how you do, because I don't think you're going to do very well. Okay. So let's start the goalkeeper. And really, this decade was dominated by three world-class legendary goalkeepers. You know, I'm gonna start with my honorable mentions here, which are Iker Casillas, who obviously he's an honorable mention for me, and in no particular order. winner of the 2010 World Cup, also, you know, won the Euro with Spain, you know, won with Real Madrid, won the Champions League as well. Massive talent. There's no denying his greatness. And again, like I said, we're picking the best of the best here. My other honorable mention at the goalkeeper is the other quote unquote legendary goalkeeper, and that's Manuel Neuer. Manuel Neuer here is an honorable mention for me. Kind of hampered in the last few years because of injury, Rob. And also, that was the other thing with Casillas. Casillas, you know, you think about it, 2017-ish, we really didn't see him anymore. I know he went over to Portugal and played, but now, obviously, suffering the heart attack, we're not going to get the chance to see a guy like Casillas anymore. Neuer suffered that foot injury, which would seem to keep him out for almost 2 years. But another goalkeeper that's won the World Cup, another goalkeeper that's won the Champions League in this decade. So, but honorable mention, of course, the guy that I'm going to pick did not win the World Cup in this decade. He did not win the Champions League in this decade. But he was on the team in his time frame, tied the record for most consecutive league championships in a single season. And again, I'm going to play with my heart here, and that's Gianluigi Buffon. And the key with Buffon that I chose over Casillas and Neuer is he didn't suffer the injuries that that we've seen the other two play. His longevity has been massive. This is a guy that has won the World Cup, but he won it 4 years before we're talking about the decade. It's a testament to what he has done as a goalkeeper. And I think when we talk about world-class goalkeepers or legendary goalkeepers or best goalkeepers of all time, like we had the Casillas we had the Ronaldo Messi talk. I think Buffon's name gets in there, and sometimes I think it gets in there ahead of Neuer and ahead of Casillas. So that's why I chose Gigi Buffon as my goalkeeper.
I'm going to actually start with my honorable mentions as well, because I have two. The first one I'm going to give is also a former Real Madrid goalkeeper, someone that, you know, is kind of underappreciated in a way, because, you know, we don't really talk about him, at least from a long center, at least when it comes to great goalkeepers. At least in my opinion, I think the one goalkeeper that I have to mention is someone like Keylor Navas.
Yeah,
I think Keylor Navas has to be in that consideration. You know, the win three consecutive Champions League as the first choice goalkeeper in one of the most dominant leagues in the world really has something to respect. I think you have to respect that. My other honorable mention, and I think this one's going to be very, maybe not controversial, but I think just someone that I feel has to be considered, my honorable mention, is Gigi Buffon. Okay. I think he has to be there because, yes, while he did have that consecutive, great career of winning consecutive titles at Serie A and at Juventus, you know, the fact that he has made over 1,000 appearances, you know, made Champions League finals, and just dominated the whole league. I just don't see it in this decade as well, because I feel that, you know, he did make it to a Euro final, and unfortunately did lose it, made it to Champions League finals and lost them as well. Didn't make a World Cup either. If you have to remember, they did not qualify for that World Cup. So I think that in that sense, you have to put kind of a little bit of a stain on his career. This is nothing in regards to him being one of the greatest ever, because I think he, by all arguments sake, he probably is. But I think in this decade, I think one goalkeeper that has dominated more than anyone else was one of your honorable mentions, and that's Manuel Neuer. Mm-hmm. I just think that Manuel Neuer winning the Champions League, being one of the best goalkeepers in the world for so many years, third in the Ballon d'Or, winning the World Cup, just really changed the way the style of the game has been played for the modern goalkeeper, being the sweeper keeper that we kind of see now with modern goalkeepers as well, like for the likes of Ederson and somewhat, you know, his playing style and his speed to rush off the line to anticipate opponents, his quick reflexes, his great shot-stopping abilities, his strength, his long throwing range, command of the area. I mean, he's had it all. Yes, that injury really is a stain of his career, at least in this decade. But from the collective standpoint and winning when it all matters, I think he has to go up there. So my goalkeeper of the decade is Manuel Neuer.
There you go. So why don't we move on to the defensive line here quickly? And I'm going to let you go first with your defensive line, because you've got a back four.
I do have a back four, and it's going to be a back four that is probably recognizable and really has dominated probably an entire league in a way. It's an all La Liga league. Mm-hmm. Back four, sorry. The first one I think I'm going at right back is going to be, I think, Dani Alves. I think Dani Alves really has dominated it in that position as one of the best right backs of this decade, and maybe the best and probably one of the best of all time. The two center backs, I think, is a duo that were so great internationally, winning a World Cup, winning a Euro. But when it comes to their clubs, they're bitter rivals, but they definitely have the respect as anyone else has as one of the best center backs of the decade. My two center backs are Sergio Ramos of Real Madrid and Gerard Piqué of Barcelona. And my left back, when you talk about great left backs, I think this one has to stand out. I mean, he for an entire decade, I think there has been no left back in the world that has been able to compete for what he's been able to do collectively and in his position as well. And that's Real Madrid left back Marcelo.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You got two Spaniards and two Brazilians there. One back that I want to put out there that I'm surprised you didn't mention was Philip Lahm. And I put him in my honorable mention. Dani Alves, Marcelo, I agree. But Philip Lahm was one that I had in my honorable mention as well. And I didn't get Philip Lahm onto my back four because I have a back three. So I wanted to go with center backs only. And Gerard Piqué is actually an honorable mention in my group as well. I wanted to spread it out a little bit more. Another honorable mention that I had, one that was sought after over the last few years, was Leo Bonucci. Mm-hmm. You remember the fever of everyone trying to get Leo Bonucci a couple years ago in the transfer market, where he finally went to Milan. So he was one that I put back there as well, because in terms of distribution out of the back, you've almost, he's unparalleled. Kind of like the way Neuer's distribution is out of from the goalkeeping position, Bonucci's able to hit that 40-yard pass consistently, and I can't think of another center back that has been able to do that like Leo Bonucci has. So that's why he's an honorable mention to me. So for me, my back three, I went with three center backs, of course. And you know, as a Juventino with the championships, I would have loved to have gone to the real BBC, right? Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini. But But Bonucci's an honorable mention. Barzagli, for me, at that point was towards the end of his career. But Giorgio Chiellini is on this team. There's nobody in world football that shows more grit and determination than Giorgio Chiellini on the back line. And right now, Juventus is really struggling without him back there as a leader and a talisman, despite having a guy like Leo Bonucci, besides having Matthijs de Ligt back there as well. This is a guy that was really the rock in that center defensive product, and he's been there for the entire decade. Through injury, we've seen him as a battled warrior, you know, being taped up, bandaged up. This is the guy that I want on my back line. The other one, Sergio Ramos, that you had mentioned, again, I can't think of another guy that's more capable of scoring with his head in the 87th minute than Sergio Ramos. He seems to do it game in, game out. The only worry with Sergio Ramos is that he'll give you a yellow card, but that's part of his grit, right? That's part of his physicality. That's part of what he does to put offensive players off of their game. He has to be on there. And the third one that I'm going to go with is a Brazilian. Thiago Silva has really been the rock at PSG as a center back. He has also been a rock for the Brazilian national team, and really lost his favor with the Brazilian national team when Dunga came in. Do you remember all of that, Rob? Dunga yep. came in, and it was a mess. But it wasn't because of Thiago Silva. It was more of a political thing there. Thiago Silva has been one of the most consistent center backs in world football over the last 10 years. And so those are the three back that I went with: Thiago Silva, Giorgio Chiellini, and Sergio Ramos. Let's move to the midfield, where I've got four, Rob. You've got three, and I'm going to play them in a diamond. Rob, this is a wealth of riches here. And remember, we're trying to keep an over-under here. You and I said that we have about five of the same players. I predicted five, and so far we've got one, Sergio Ramos. I think this is where we're going to actually have more. There is a wealth of riches in the midfield, and we've talked about, we've seen it tactically, how the match is won in the midfield with controlling the ball. Tiki-taka, right? We've seen that, and tiki-taka is going to play into very heavily into my midfield. I want to start with a defensive midfielder, though. Actually, let me give you an honorable mention in the midfield for me. I just want to give just one quickly, Kevin De Bruyne, who's been an absolute revelation for both club and country, Belgium and Manchester City. He's kind of bounced around between Germany and England, and he's been nothing but phenomenal. And I think when we talk about the next decade, the 2020s, I think he is going to feature in our World 11. My mid four starts with Xabi Alonso in the midfield. Talk about a defensive midfielder. This guy was as devastating. He was as controlling. And we talk about people that could be good head coaches. I think a guy like Xabi Alonso would make a very good head coach.
Well, he is the manager of the Real Sociedad B team
at this moment. Exactly. You know what I mean? And this is the kind of guy that I would want as a manager. And in fact, I think when we think about these four players here, I think they all could make head coaches or very good head coaches. Without going any further along, because I know we didn't want to keep the show a little shorter, my other three midfielders, Xavi, Iniesta, Andrea Pirlo, plain and simple, some of the greatest midfielders we've ever seen in our time, and I get to put all four of them on my team. What were your three?
Well, Joe, I think you talk about similarity, but I think we're going to really differ on this one.
Really?
We really are, yes, because my center defensive midfielder, I think, is someone that, you know, is really under the radar in terms of great center defensive midfielders. I mean, yes, Xabi Alonso has done a wonderful career in what he's able to do and being that cerebral player. But I just think this guy has to be considered, for me, probably the greatest defensive midfielder of his generation, maybe of the finest of the modern era.
Okay.
I think for my center defensive midfielder, it's going to be a guy like Sergio Busquets.
Okay.
I think Sergio Busquets really is able to play the game. I think the game really has moved forward in terms of how he's able to read it and break down opposition plays. I think he's just such an intelligent, tactical mind of the game. I had to put him on there. Mm-hmm. For my other midfielder, I think we have to put one that I think is always going to be on these lists. I think one of the finest players, one of the finest midfielders of all time, I think you'd also mention it, is Andres Iniesta.
Mm-hmm.
I think Iniesta really has to be considered one of the best players of his generation because everything that he's won in his entire career, the fact that he's able to dictate the play as either a defensive midfielder, maybe an attacking midfielder, you know, that combination with Xavi, with Messi as well, really has made him a flawless wonderful, wonderful player. You know, he's finishing his career over there in Japan, but just that dominance over the whole decade of playing at Barcelona, he has to be on there. And for my last midfielder is a Ballon d'Or winner. No, it's not Messi. No, it's not Ronaldo, but it's the one that actually broke the dominance of that player. It's Luka Modric.
Wow.
I think Luka Modric has become so pivotal for that Real Madrid side that has won three Champions League. You know, obviously led Croatia to a World Cup final. I think he has to be considered one of the best midfielders of his generation, and I put him in there just because of the really intelligent play of how he's able to contain himself. Yes, I mean, honorable mentions go to, as you mentioned, Andrea Pirlo, you know, the likes of Schweinsteiger, Xavi, those type of players, Xavi Alonso. But I just think that with Luka Modric, I mean, he really is that conductor. I think he really is that type of player that has been so useful for that dominant Real Madrid side. And those are my three, Luka Modric, Andres Iniesta, and Sergio Busquets.
I'm surprised you left Xavi off because many of the pundits out there will say that Barcelona started to decline when Xavi left. You know,
yeah,
that was
but
like
the thing with Xavi, he left at the mid of the decade.
Right.
He left in the middle.
Right. No, I know. But it's just, you know, he was, for me, he was a pivotal piece of that great, great, great Barcelona team. And he was kind of the first piece to kind of fall off the puzzle. So, but it's your honor, sir. We're at the striker position. And I mean, I don't know. There's so many to choose from. There's so many honorable mentions you could make here. Give me a couple of your honorable mentions and then give me your top three there.
Okay. So I think with honorable mentions, I mean, you're playing with house money in this case.
Yeah.
You're really looking at dominant strikers. I mean, you could go from the likes of David Villa, Wayne Rooney, Radamel Falcao, you know, even the likes of Kylian Mbappe. Yeah, he's even on this list. Lewandowski. There's so Benzema. I mean, I can't give you a top three. I mean, Ibrahimovic, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he has to be in there. But I think the one player that I kind of have to put in, just because he's just so deadly and has been able to do it at different leagues as well. I mean, there's how many strikers can really go and dominate two leagues as top goal scorer in all of Europe. I mean, there's only a select few, and I think you could probably get who I'm going for. My pick for the striker of the decade, Luis Suarez.
Luis Suarez,
I think Luis Suarez really has been able to dominate, to be the only player to win a European Golden Shoe in the era of Messi and Ronaldo, and to do that at two different leagues. You have to give credit when the credit's due. And, you know, for internationally, you know, he won the Copa America for Uruguay, so he definitely has that kind of an advantage. And to be part of that team that was so fun to watch with, you know, the MSN, Messi, Suarez, and Neymar at Barcelona, one of the best, probably the best attacking three in Spanish football history. Pichichi, all those type of titles. Yes, the controversy will have to go there with his... We could go from the goal line handball at the World Cup in 2010, the three biting occasions, the accusations of racism as well. I think if you take all of that and look strictly at the player himself, I think you have to put in Luis Suarez as your striker of the decade, at least mine, striker of the decade.
And the other two to round him out, do we have to guess?
It's tough. It really is. I mean, I if I had to pick two...
No. I mean, because you said it's a 4-3-3.
Sorry. Yeah. I think we do have to guess a little. The case of where you play them, I don't think it matters. I think when you, in terms of your left wing, you have to put in Cristiano Ronaldo. I think that was the position where he's always dominated in his career. And on the right wing, you have someone that switched from a number nine, who I think really was deadly as a number nine. But as a winger, he's really revolutionized himself and really become the type of player that has dominated, and that guy is Lionel Messi.
Right. So I was going to say, there's really no debate in our front three in terms of the left and right wings, because you've got CR7 on the left, Messi on the right. It would be insanity not to put either of them on the pitch anywhere, right? I mean, you could put them somewhere, just, you know, on the touchline. It doesn't matter. They have to be there. Luis Suarez is an honorable mention for me. Robert Lewandowski, honorable mention for me. And right now, today, this minute, Robert Lewandowski is the best striker in world football. I don't even think that's debatable. Another honorable mention that maybe goes on to the team of the decade, the next decade, is Neymar. Is a name that we haven't talked about yet. I mean, I know the injuries. I know, you know, there's a lot of extracurricular that goes with Neymar, but there's no denying the fact that he is the most expensive footballer in the world, right? 222 million euro to move him to PSG from Barcelona. That still hasn't been broken. You know, and his talent is immense. We've seen it time and time again. But my striker is not Luis Suarez. And again, I'm not denying Luis Suarez in his greatness and his ability to score goals. He's been an incredible talent. Really one of the big pieces, especially when you compare him with Cavani on the international level, have been absolutely deadly. But my striker is the great Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Mm-hmm. You know, done it in Italy, done it in France, done it in Spain, done it in the United States, did it, you know, was doing it in England before the knee injury at Manchester United. He's been able to play in every single league, every single competition. I know the one big mark against him is that he's never won the Champions League. You know, like we talk about with Gigi Buffon. But there's no denying the fact that if you ever need a goal, and a goal scored, no matter how you want it with his head, you want it with his feet, you want it with his chest, whatever you want, he's a flair for the dramatic. He is the focal point. If there was ever a quote-unquote attention whore, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is that attention whore, which can sometimes be good because it takes the focus away from the rest of the team. And for me, that also, the persona goes along with the talent, and there's no denying the talent. Another guy that we've talked about, you know, we talk about physical specimens with Cristiano Ronaldo. Zlatan Ibrahimovic came back at 36 years old from an injury that should have ended his career. And he is now potentially going back to Italy to play again. Now, what will we get out of him in Italy? We don't know. But if he's even a semblance of what he was, you're going to get some great goal scoring. You're going to get some talent. You're going to get drive and determination. And for me, for all the greatness that Luis Suarez is, and we saw him score a ridiculous goal, right? Just the other day, the heel flick. You saw that, Rob?
Yeah.
I mean, no denying Suarez, but for me, it was Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I thought that was a quick one. So I put the over-under on same players at 5, and we got 4.
Yep.
So pretty darn close. Let's, you know, we're running out of time, Rob. We've only got about 15 minutes left. So we want to talk about a couple of moments. Oh, I'm sorry. Manager of this team, right?
Yes.
I'll go first. Simple. I have honorable mentions to Carlo Ancelotti, who was just recently sacked. I have honorable mention to Jose Mourinho, who was just recently rehired. I went with Pep Guardiola for me. How about you?
Yeah, I did as well. I think winning the Champions League at Barcelona with that dominant tiki-taka side, you know, dominating the league in La Liga, Bundesliga, and the Premier League. Yes, he would love to win another Champions League, and I think he would do so at Manchester City. But I think when you talk about managers that really changed the game in this entire decade, it's Pep Guardiola.
No, absolutely. So we actually have 5 in common then. Like I said, we set the over-under at 5. So let's talk about some moments, you know, quickly here. And, you know, I've been driving, ever since we had came up with the idea of doing this show, kept thinking in the back of my head, what was the most memorable moment? What was the most memorable moment? What was the most memorable? And I always came back to the same moment for me. And for me, I'm going with moment. I mean, there are things that we could talk about in terms of times. Okay, Juve winning 8 consecutive Serie A's, breaking Lyon's record of 7. We could talk about Leicester City's title. For me, those weren't necessarily moments because they didn't happen in a split second or in a day or in an hour. They happened over the course. So I never look at those as moments. It's just a personal thing. For me, it was 2012. I kept coming back to it. 2012. Sergio Aguero, City down 2-1 to QPR. United holding the EPL title. I mean, literally, they're wrapping the red and white ribbons around the trophy. Eden Dzeko scores after the 90th minute in stoppage time to level 2-2, and then Aguero with that dramatic goal, 3-2, to turn the trophy over to the other side of Manchester in a moment was possibly one of the most dramatic finishes to a football match and a football season that I've ever seen in my life. And I, as much as I kept thinking about a dramatic moment, I could never get past the Aguero goal in the moment to win that title for Manchester City. That's the first one I'm going to give to you. What were your recollections of that moment?
Yeah, that was a crazy moment. I think that's it goes into one of my moments as well. I mean, the fact that, you know, City were just seconds away from losing their first league title in, what, 40-plus years or something. Mm-hmm. For Aguero to score probably the most important goal in probably Premier League history. I think we have this, not just in club history, but I think in Premier League history, has to be up there in my moments. It's not my number one, because I think when you talk about moments as a whole, you really need to go into that kind of memorable slash. I will pick Leicester season, though, okay. Because I just think that the whole – I think, yes, the way it could have been wasn't as dramatic as the one that City won. Yes, I understand that, but you can't fail to recognize a team that was 5,000-1 to win probably one of the most strong – arguably the strongest league in the world – and doing so against top powerhouses in the game, for them to do that, I think they have to be number one. I think that has to be one of the great upsets in sports, not just in football, but I think that moment goes into my mind, similar to what the Aguero goal was, as well. I think a moment as well that really shocked the entire world, is this particular game that happened back in 2014 in Brazil, where at home soil, at the Mineirão, which unfortunately is now home destroyed to a second division team in Cruzeiro, I have to pick the 7-1. Mm-hmm. The Germany 7-1 in the World Cup semifinal, biggest defeat ever for Brazil in a World Cup, the most dominant team in the history of the World Cup. And then obviously Germany went on to win the final, beating Argentina. But just that moment where you saw a 5-0 at halftime against Brazil in a World Cup semifinal at home, you can't make this up. You really can't. And I think that just that moment where it ended up at 7 really, really started to see, I guess, the decline of Brazil as a dominant team. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're still trying to regain back its prestige, you know, trying to win back the World Cup, because they still are the most dominant team in the history of the World Cup and international soccer. But that moment, I think, has to resonate for me as probably the moment, one of the moments that I remember of this entire decade.
I was poolside at Wyndham Bonnet Creek in Orlando, Florida, watching that match. Talk about a memorable moment. I remember exactly where I was. I mean, it was a great
Same here. But I was eating pizza at my house. That's how I remember.
Thomas Müller, Miroslav Klose, Toni Kroos, Sami Khedira, André Schürrle. Those are the 7 goal scorers. And then can you name, because I went and looked it up, can you name who scored the one in the 90th minute?
Of course, Oscar.
Oscar scored in the 90th minute.
That's always going to be remembered in his career in a way.
The trivia answer, right?
Who was the one?
Certainly a memorable one for me as well. I know we've only got a couple more minutes. I want to bring up like one more moment, but it was a double moment for me, Rob, and then I'd like to get one more out of you. For me, one of the more memorable moments is actually, this is going to be, I guess, a bad reflection on Lionel Messi. To see Barcelona blow 3-goal leads in second legs of Champions League play, knockout stages, 2 years consecutively, being up 4-1 to Roma, and I believe it was 2018, is the actual year, but it was the 17-18 season, only to lose 3-0 in Rome to send Roma onto the semifinals of the Champions League that year with the Kostas Manolas goal, where he celebrated 82nd minute, went crazy running around the track, and then only to repeat the feat again, blowing a 3-0 lead to Liverpool, going back to Anfield, and Liverpool scoring 4 goals, sending them to the Champions League final, a final that they just recently won. I think, you know, reflection back in terms of a longer quote-unquote moment, that was one of the ones that stands out to me as the agony of defeat in this particular. I mean, as much as the 7-1 was certainly the agony of defeat, and you saw the people openly crying in the stands, I think it was just shocking that Barcelona, the great Barcelona, would in consecutive years drop 3-0 leads in a knockout stage of a Champions League and get sent home by two different teams. What were your thoughts on that, on those particular matches, and that time, and what it meant at Barca?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was probably a dominant, at least we look at the dominance that they both had, in La Liga. For them to blow two leads in a row against Roma and Liverpool really send a big shock in a way. One was a quarterfinal, the other was a semifinal. I think an honorable mention for me as well will have to be the other lead that PSG ended up blowing.
Yes.
The 4-0 win in the first leg for PSG and then losing 6-1 in the second leg, the Sergio Roberto last-minute goal. It's probably one of the greatest, probably the best comeback in Champions League history, maybe of all of the decade. But the one moment that I think, one more that I think will have to be a big one for me, and I think this one is, I think you can make the argument as well of just how big this one is, because it just resonates of how great the team was. And really, it's it's something that you have to really be appreciative of. I think it's the Spain double in the World Cup and the Euros, you know, winning the World Cup, their first ever World Cup in 2010, and then repeating it again in the Euros in 2012 with that beautiful, great side that Spain is, that they're up there. At least on an international perspective, they have to be recognized in their dominance of the first years of the decade.
Sure, and when you couple that with, because they were back-to-back winners of the Euros, they won the 2008 Euro. So when you put all of those together, it's really the introduction to this particular decade, and fitting that it were Spain that did that, because if we look at the Spanish sides in club world football, we talk about teams that have won, if correct me if I'm wrong, 8 of the 10 Champions Leagues between Barca and Real Madrid. So 8 of the 10 Champions Leagues under Spanish sides. I believe the only ones that didn't go to them are Bayern Munich and obviously Liverpool last year. But otherwise, it has been Barca, Real Madrid. It has been Spain. It has been a dominant decade for Spanish football. And I think that was our introduction to the decade, is the massive dominance that we saw out of those Spanish sides. And if you look at our team of the decades, when you put them together, very Spanish influence, right? Whether it be players that played for Spain or players that played for Barca or players that played for Real Madrid, very Spanish influenced in terms of those sides that you and I created. And it just goes to show you what Spanish football did to open the domination of this particular decade. Let me ask you this now, because I mean that's a clear comparison. What nation do you see opening the 20s? Do you see it as Brazil? Do you see it as France, obviously coming off the World Cup in 2018? Do you see it as maybe resurgent Italy or the Netherlands, that, you know, this decade suffered humiliating defeats to be eliminated before even going to the World Cup, but now seem to be showing massive signs of strength out of both those sides? What team, what country, where would you say that next Spain is coming from that might open our decade?
I think this might be a controversial one. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe for you. I think it's England.
Okay, yeah.
I think just because of the league, of how dominant it's been so far, and that new generation of players coming up, you know, that's going to influence so many other players. I think it's England. I generally think it's England that might be that dominant one. I mean, knock on wood, and I'm going to be completely wrong on this one, and I can't wait to go back 9 years later, in the next 10 years, to see how wrong I was. But I think it's England. It really is. Yes, Brazil will always be big. I think that'll always be special. Right. Spain as well, leaving a mark. Italy, France, Germany. But I think I see England as the one that might be next dominant team in world football. That's the one for me. That's the one.
Will that translate into English players?
I think so.
Yeah.
I generally think so.
We've seen Raheem Sterling, right? I think everyone will point to him as the one at the moment. Yeah. But, you know, do you feel like there are others, like Marcus Rashford? Do you see guys like that? Or
Jadon Sancho.
Yeah,
I think players will start to leave their bubble of the Premier League and try to dominate in other leagues and try it there. You know, we see Kieran Trippier at Atletico Madrid, Jadon Sancho obviously in Germany. We could see that. But I think in the long sense, I think with the Premier League being as dominant as it's been, at least recently, they're the ones to produce these talents, these young English talents heading into the next decade.
You see, for me, I do think it's Italy. I really do, because I think that the defense is still there. When you talk about guys like Romagnoli, you've got guys to hand the baton off like Bonucci, and even Chiellini still at this point. But the midfield in Italy, it just seems like they are churning out midfielders left and right. And one of the things that Spain did when they dominated this particular stretch was they did it through the midfield. You know, I know we had David Villa, I know we had Fernando Torres, but it was really the Xavis and the Iniestas of the world that dominated. And I think that you're starting to see that in Italy with guys like Sandro Tonali. You're starting to see it with guys like, Nicola Barella. You've seen even guys like Chiesa and Bernardeschi. So I feel like Italy structurally is gearing towards the way Spain did it. And I think you could possibly see a repeat there. I mean, and that's also partially my heart, but I think that's kind of, you know, and I think we're seeing some of that in the Netherlands as well. And that's why I think those are going to be the big ones for me moving forward. I don't know that we will get one singular country like we did Spain, but I think I definitely agree with your shout out of England. I think that that's definitely one to watch, but it's going to be an interesting decade coming up. So Rob, before we leave real quick, we are pretty much out of time. Yep. Who's your player of the decade?
I mean, one that we've been talking about ad nauseum all year. Mm-hmm. All decade, really, in this entire show. I mean, in terms of how great he's been, I think in the simplest of words, it's going to be Lionel Messi.
And for me, I'm going to actually go the other side, and I'm going to go Cristiano Ronaldo, only because of what Cristiano did in this decade under the international level as well as the club level, where Messi didn't duplicate that. But again, we're debating, you know, how shiny is the gold, right? So that's
my personal pick is the eye test. I think just when it comes to how creative he's been, how he's able to do everything and be that type of goal scorer, what he offers more. Yes, that international title is a big stain, but I think when you talk about the collective standpoint and what you see as the player himself, I pick no Messi.
And for me, just saying, for me to say Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm a Messi fan. In fact, I don't own a Ronaldo jersey. I own a Messi jersey. So for me to say that, you know, means a lot, you know what I mean? So all right, Rob, what do you say we start a new decade together?
Let's do it. All right, here's to the next 10 years.
Here's to the next 10 years, my friend. Let's hit the closing music. So for episode 267 of Low Limit Football, I want to thank my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, for joining me for these last 6 years. Moving into the next decade, year 7 for us. Hopes to be bigger and better. We might have a new announcement of a new affiliation coming up in the new year. You'll have to pay attention to that. And again, to all our listeners, all our guests that we've had over the past year and over the past 6 of the decade, we want to thank you all from the bottom of our hearts. We want to wish everyone a very, very Merry Christmas, a very happy and safe and healthy 2020. And we will be back on the new year to give you even more great coverage of Low Limit Football. So, for episode 267 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas saying Merry Christmas to all and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you all in 2020.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.